Welcome to Starflamers On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I've been SFB Online, Fedcom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder, how to join us, we have Talkcast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either dial on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444-34. Follow the directions, the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. Or you can join us on Twitch. Just go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall and you will find the stream right there, and including last week's episode if you miss it. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is SFUOnCall@gmail.com. It's SFUOnCall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, I also have the account SFU On Call. I have a personal account called Paul Franz, where, of course, I talk about being an Orioles fan and technology and being Catholic. Those are big topics, and possibly some replies to other tech people. But that's about it. So if you're not interested in that stuff, I think you probably should avoid following me then. But if you want to know about the podcast, follow SFU On Call, and you will see what's the latest topic, and also posting of YouTube channel videos. The link to them every single week. Obviously, if you want to, please subscribe to the YouTube channel, and you'll be able to see my lovely face and a screencast of what's happening on my screen, so you can see what in the world is he looking at. In some cases, that's good. Some cases, it's okay. But, you know, I maybe see a little behind the scenes stuff. You never know on what day that is. And of course, this talkcast gets turned into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. We have a brand new SFU coloring book. Starfleet Universe coloring book number 3 is now available on Warehouse 23, Drive-Thru RPG, and War Game Vault. And of course, Steve Cole has been busy. Well, actually, not Steve Cole. Steve Cole has been guiding the effort to have more shapeways miniatures. One of those I just looked at lately is these Andromedan X ships. It's beautiful. If you ever have seen the threat file, the cover of it, that's what it looks like. And so I love those dramas because it looks so cool. So modern. It's awesome. Getting back to the tournaments. Of course, the Sapphire Star Tournament number 5 is starting this week. You will see an email go out to those people who are SFB Online subscribers so that you will know that it's available. You can sign up. First 16 people. After that, you can be on the list, but you will have to wait to see if someone drops out, and then pray someone drops out so that you can join the fray. But I would recommend go to the SFB Online website immediately, sign up, pay for your, remember, you need to pay the $10 fee, entrance fee, and to jump in so that your name will be on the list for that tournament, because otherwise you might just miss out on playing some awesome people. Moving on to the library, unfortunately, I hate to say this, but neither have seen any progress. As I mentioned last week, you know, the current percent complete for the third gen conversion is still stuck at 75.94%, and most of those are made up of PFs and Omega ships. When it comes to the FedComs, I actually just got some this past week. I actually got them today. So I think my conscience is clear on that, though my conscience is not quite so clear because I didn't give it to them until this past Sunday. So they did a pretty good turnaround. I've been slacking on trying to get the ships, ship cards out to them. But that leaves the squadron size at 353 and the fleet's ships at 251. That's within the library. That's in addition to the ones that are included in the client itself. Just a reminder of that fact. It does not include the ones that are part of the client itself. So that is news for this week. And it's me, the only Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we have, well, me. And then, of course, we have Barry, we have Gary, we have Dave. How you doing, Dave? And with that, hey, Barry, how you doing?
Hey, I'm finally back.
That's always good to hear. Always good to hear. I was going to say long time to see, but it's not been that long. It's only been 2 weeks.
I know.
But
I know.
Talk about someone it's who I haven't seen weeks. For a while. Gary, how you doing?
Yeah. I'm not too bad. Hope everyone's doing okay.
Yeah,
for the most part.
So, are we going to pick over the Carnivans this time around, or is there something else on the agenda?
Something else on the agenda, because I didn't give Barry enough heads up on the Carnivans, because last week, Barry wasn't here, but I did the Carnivans a quick review anyway. But I definitely, I want to really go through, go back to them, because I want to hear someone else's opinion and somebody else's take on take on the Carnivans. And I figure we can push that off until next week, and Barry definitely get the rules because that's what we will be doing next week. Okay.
Have you thought about a sample ship that you want to talk about when that happens?
Not yet. Actually, that's one thing I need to do, which is look through some of the captain's logs, because I'm not sure. Do the captain's logs have anything that's not available in module C6?
I think just like an area control ship and like some heavy fighter carrier for each of them.
Okay, so
I would probably just stick with the there's a command cruiser in the module C6 itself, and the heavy cruiser as well.
Okay.
And I guess either of those would probably be the best place to start.
Mm-hmm. Understood. And we will definitely go over that. And I need to get the SSDs because I bought the rules and to go over, to make sure I had all the rules, up to date and all that, and then realize that it didn't include the SSD, so I had to buy the SSD separately. So I will do that. What?
So I think you had said something about the Klingon versus the Zin tournament cruisers.
That's what I figured it would be best, because as is, I wasn't sure if Gary was going to show up or not, because I know, Gary, you have not been around lately. But it's fine, This is not a responsibility that you need to be here, But it's always good.
Well, there is the new Borak ship on Shapeways that's being discussed on the BBS. There's another look at the advanced technology Andromedan miniature for Shapeways as well. So I don't know if you've brought either of those up or mentioned them just yet.
No, not yet.
Now the Borak. I forget what was the Borak all about?
They are, basically their homeworld is in the Hydran off-map area, and their ships basically are exclusively phaser-armed for the most, with the exception of these shuttle, fighters that can be armed as suicide shuttles, basically.
Are they the ones with the mega phasers?
They have mega phasers on their turrets, and they also have these things called phaser cannons, which can fire up to 3 phaser 2 shots.
Yes. Now that you mentioned that, once I realized that, it's like, I've actually played a tournament cruiser of theirs once about 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, the phaser M's.
Yeah, the phaser. It would have what, like 2 phaser cannons and 2 phaser M's or something like that. everything else is pretty much P1s.
Yep. That's, you know,
there actually is a set of sample ship cards for a Federation commander for the Borak in Captain's Log 51 as well. So,
which is what I have right now, if I'm showing on the screen, which I'm showing the Borak heavy cruiser.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the ships that Steve Cole sent me. So.
Yeah, I think I tried using that ship as a tournament cruiser, and it was underwhelming, to say the least. The problem it had was, although in theory it looked good, and it looked like it would be, obviously it's phaser arm, so it's going to be very power efficient, but to try to compensate for that, they so severely underpowered it that it had, for that, you know, it could walk or chew gum, but it couldn't do both at the same time. And if you didn't fire any phasers, it could run around at high speed. But the moment you fired your phasers, getting it rearmed, it just slowed down.
Well, I can understand that. In that they're trying to balance out that, you know.
Oh, I know. But it was just disheartening how bad it was that way. I think the turn mode wasn't that great. Was it C? I haven't looked at the ship in 10 years, so I'm just going off memory.
Right. I have not. I'd have to look at the captain's logs to find out the information about, you know, what the turn mode is and so forth. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. I think the mega phasers had pretty restricted arcs also.
They're on a turret. So.
Oh. Well, or was it a flying bridge?
The mega phaser uses like a Mauler firing arc, but it's mounted on a turret. Yeah. There's the two of them are mounted on a turret. And most of the other weapons are like FA arc. I mean, it's relatively small as heavy cruisers go for an Alpha Oxen Empire. It's only about like a move cost of 3/4 in Federation Commander, at least. Mm-hmm. So, and actually, the thing in FC is interesting is that because FC doesn't have phaser capacitors, so.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Interesting to see, like,
that would cripple a ship like that.
But there are rules in FC to cover the hunter killer fighters as well. So how much of that makes a mm-hmm. difference or not is another story.
Yeah.
I
see those in the PDF ship card that I have for like the four frigate has a couple of hunter killers.
So what were I remember the hunter killers, but I don't remember exactly what was in them. Is that like a suicide shuttle of some kind?
I'm assuming I assume they're fighters.
Actually both. They have I think it's a phaser 3 and a phaser 2, a standard. Well, in the FC version of the rules anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they can fly around at fighter speeds, but you also have the option of installing an antimatter bomb. Now, I think in SFB, I think in FC as well, they're remote controlled fighters. So, they're intended never to have a pilot. So, they're not that eager to, you know, lose their own crew, I guess. But there's that. And
mean that they're also kind of like seeking weapons, at least when it comes to SFB, because obviously in FedCom we don't have wild weasels. So you don't have to worry about fire control nearly as much. While in SFB we have wild weasels, which means that if they are remote control and they require active fire control to control them, that means if you wild weasel, all of a sudden they become inert, I would think. Well, maybe just keep going.
Yeah. Now the
one direction.
Getting back to the mega phasers and the turrets. Can you rotate the turrets then?
Yeah, they can rotate 60° at a time. I'm not too sure in SFB because each of the empires that uses turrets in SFB has to have its own rules for turrets. So like the warp rules for turrets are different from the Imperium rules in Triangulum, right. And different from the Kari rules, different from the Borak rules. So I think in FC they haven't got that far, but I wouldn't be surprised if the rules were more streamlined in terms of one empire to another. Although Because I think the Borak can turn their turret for free, but if the Warb ever get into FC, because in SFB the Warb have to pay an energy point to turn their turret.
Correct.
So,
I guess
with the Borak, they already having trouble with their power, so that would be a bit cruel to make them pay to rotate their turrets as well.
Agreed.
Right. Now, how often can they rotate them?
That's the one question I was going to ask.
I know the Warb is at energy allocation. They can turn one facing.
I'm trying to check here. Oh, it says here, well, in FC at least, a turret rotates at the very end of the movement phase after all movement has taken place. If a turret rotates in a given impulse, it may not rotate again in the following impulse. So basically, it's like the equivalent of 8 SFB impulses.
Right.
Right. So 4 times per turn it can rotate.
Well, I don't have the SFB rules, so I'm not too sure how fast they turn in that game system. But in FC, the provisional FC rules at least allow that.
Yeah, well, they usually try to keep them very similar, you know, when it comes to that.
Yeah. Yeah, and how much rotation is there in them? Can they go 360 or?
Well, in FC at least, they say that they can turn 360 unless there's a note on the ship card saying otherwise. And on the ship card, there is no such note. But one thing I think is a bit unfortunate because, like some of the other empires that have their ship cards turned like in landscape mode, like the Playtest Prober ship cards in the Omega player pack, or like for example, if you look at the pack for the Andromedan ship card for say a pair of Mambas, everything on the ship card is facing in the same direction. So it's not just the ship that's turned. But for the provisional Borak ship cards, the details about things like turn mode and marines and frame damage is all facing in the portrait mode. And it's only the ship itself that's in landscape mode. So you kind of have to keep turning the ship card back and forth to, you know, keep everything together at once.
Oh. Yeah, now that you mention it, 3/4 movement cost. And that was a ship that was underpowered to begin with. So the Mega Phasers were slightly less powerful than a P4. And the Phaser Cannons were kind of nice. It's like a heavy Gatling, but it fires less. But I think it costs 2 points of power for all 3 shots. But it fired on the Phaser 2 table.
Yeah, because in FC, the way the Phaser Cannon is handled is that each Phaser 2 shot is 3/4 of an energy point. So I guess if you're firing all 3, that's 3/4, 1.5, 2.25. So a little bit more than 2.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that some of the weapons that in SFB take like 1/3 a point of power, that doesn't really exist in FC because... FC, you know, splits everything into like halves or quarters or eighths or whatever.
Well, if they try to.
Right.
I guess when there's some ships are like 1/3 movement cost, or am I wrong? They just have them so they're 1/4.
Well, what they do is that if a ship has a move cost of 1/3 in SFB, they move it down to 1/4. Okay. So like a Federation frigate has a move cost of 1/4. But on the other end, if a ship has a move cost of 2/3, they usually move it up to 3/4. So like a Fed NCL has the same move class as an old CL. The only time this gets caught out though is that in SFB, the Fed Strike Cruiser has a move cost of 5/6. That actually gets turned into 3/4 in FC. So I personally think that makes the ship way too powerful in FC. I think it should have been put a move cost of 1 and just basically that would have been more in keeping with it being a failed design, but it's like 15 years too late for that. So, anyway,
yeah, Barry and I know that one. Just thinking about the Omegas.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but if it's wrong, it's wrong. It needs to get fixed.
Oh, I agree.
But that part of the issue with FC is that whenever you have a laminated ship card, it's more set in stone relative to a paper SSD, unfortunately.
Right.
This is one of the reasons why PDFs are So nice.
Oh, agreed, agreed. But you know, the same time, ADB's been selling paper product for so long. You know, even back in the day, you know, that's the way it was done. And Lord knows, you know, they've been fighting, you know, pirates forever and ever, where people have uploaded PDFs of like the SSDs, and then, you know, they've been given to their friends instead of actually buying the SSD books and things like that.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I should note is for Shapeways. Now, I don't know if you have it brought up or not, but if you look at a sample warp ship on Shapeways, the way that the miniature is presented is that the turrets are actually above the ship, and there's like a little like a rod or whatever that's like keeping it up. So what you do is that when you get the miniature, you actually clip off the turret and you hollow out you remove the rod basically, and then what you can do is that the slots are hexagonal, so that you can basically place the turret at the correct angle for SFB terms at least.
Oh, okay.
Now with the Borak, there's a discussion on the BBS about the Borak, and I was personally thinking that it should be hexagonal, the slot for the turret as well. But there was a Call to Arms Starfleet enthusiast who, not that I'm not enthusiastic about Call to Arms as well, but a person who's primarily into that game system, who was saying that they'd rather it not be hexagonal because, you know, years from now, if the Borak ever get introduced into that game system, then they might have 90-degree turns rather than 60 degrees, because it's there's only four shield facings in that. Well, they're not even shield facings, but there's only, you know, four main directions. So it's looking like it might end up being a circular base. So you basically just have to try to wing it in terms of figuring out like whether you actually are at the correct angle or not.
Right. Well, I think that'd be much better. I think it'd be much better.
Or you can make it 12-sided.
Yeah, but that's to that point, when you get the 12-sided, when I'm assuming, you know, it gets ridiculous. You know, I definitely think the round better approach. You know, it gives the best of flexibility. You know, and if you want to go completely hexless, because SFB does support hexless. I don't think there are many out there who actually play it hexless, but there is the support for it. The module W, you know, has directed turns and things.
I saw that said, oh, these rules are unplayable, and just moved on.
Well,
it's been noted that apparently the. If you get too fiddly in terms of the options that you offer, the printers for Shapeways can't print them properly.
Right. Mm. That is a problem.
That's kind of a major problem then.
Now, I would also, while we're here, suggest having a look at the updated Andro X-Ship, if you see it on the BBS there.
Okay.
Where is this?
Is it under June 1st? The Andromeda X ships? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the same thread, but further down.
Hang on a sec. Let me pull that.
From yesterday? Is that the one you're talking about?
Should be yesterday, yeah. There's like two or three views of it.
Yeah, there's two views of it.
Is this on the Starfleet Universe website?
That's the crate. Wow. That looks.
Where is this?
It's on the discussion board. Going to the Shapeways,
which I haven't been there in like years. But go on.
Okay.
Starfleet battles.
No, it's Star. It's in the Shapeways project. Then ships for Shapeways approval, and then June 1st.
Hang on a sec. I'm in Starfleet Universe BBS. Is that not where I should be? Oh, Shapeways Project. I see it.
Yeah.
then okay, which one?
Ships for Shapeway Approval.
All right.
And then you should see June 1st, Andrew X Ships.
Oh my. Oh, is that in the C5A module or something?
Well, that's the...
It's based on, module C3A.
Yeah, it's C3A. Based on the style that was on the threat cover, which is a beautiful style. I love that style.
Oh, it is beautiful. That is nice.
I gotta get,
remember we were driving back from Origins that year? Mm-hmm. I think it was the last year they had this Starfleet. ADB was at Origins, and I had purchased the C3A module and the SSD book, and we were going over it on the drive back from Columbus.
Yes, I do.
Oh, that's all we need is Andrews with the phaser ones.
Okay, so they should be available for the July availability, basically. Steve Cole says 1st of July, but you never know, that might get pushed until the next week after July 4th. Not sure.
Would you ever consider taking some of those solid shapes and putting them on the client? Am I going to get muted at this point?
I would love to do that if there was a way of doing it. The tough part is getting the models. Yes, Gary.
For what it's worth, to give you an example, you know the way the Neo-Tholian ships on Shapeways look very different to the older Neo-Tholians? Like they're the new ones don't have any curves. They're very angular and they've got more detail and stuff. Well, it looks like actually what's happening is that there's a Tholian Master Starship book is being worked on. And so now the art, there's a sample that was posted by Steve Cole on the BBS a few weeks ago, before his operation, where he actually showed the Neo-Tholian battleship in the new design style. So it is looking like when the new Master Starship book comes out, all of the Neos will now look, of the new standard, or at least some of them might. So it's possible that if you are looking for line art, at least for those ships, maybe you could ask once the Starship book comes out if they'd be willing to let you put them on the client as well.
Right. Well, as I said, the big thing there is, what is the file format? Is there a Java library which will allow them to be, that will actually make them viewable? You know, way back when, now this is so many years ago, there was, of course, there was a library called Java 3D, which allowed you to actually view 3D models. But this is so long ago, I'm not sure what's currently supported in Java, because that's what the client is.
I mean, though, is that Steve Cole's basically, he's working up 2D line art in the same style as the new 3D Shapeways minis.
Oh, okay. So it could be used for a counter, which is, I think, is the idea.
Actually, Barry, while you're there, if you go back a section, you can actually see that Borax ship I was talking about, if you want.
All right. Let me take a look. See. So how far back should I go?
Just back to the ships for Shapeways approval, and then near the bottom, you'll see there's like a section for a new Romulan Mauler, and well, not new, but you'll see down there at the bottom is like a Borax heavy cruiser.
Oh, there it is. Oh. Looks just like a Fed heavy.
No, they have a... The Fed heavy, and right next for scale of how large the Borax heavy cruiser is going to be.
I'm just teasing you.
Grumble. These people, I tell you. Bye, yada.
Should...
It even shows that the three weapon mounts for the mega phasers on the wings.
Yep, I see. Yeah. Cool.
But it's still a provisional model, so
Right.
if anyone who's interested in either that or the Andrew X ship or anything else that's in the works, they should check back regularly on the BBS to see how things are progressing towards the whenever the next launch is, the next upload is rather.
Yeah, because obviously the Borak ship is far from being ready in my mind. It says July 1st, which I assume that means it's going to be available, and the plan is to have it so it's available in August. Reason I say that is because of he mentioned that the Andromedan X ship, the crate, is gonna be available July 1st. So I would
Well, I
think.
mean, it's better late than never either way, so
Oh
I mean, I
yeah.
wouldn't
Oh,
panic either way.
I'm in no way, shape, or form complaining that oh, it's gonna be out in July. Phew. I like the rendering, the initial rendering, which is not even, it's a rough draft, is what it is in my mind. I'm not sure that I'm. As I said, that's more of a rendering, less of a rendering of a 3D model. It's what someone drew, meaning.
I think it's still interesting how when you see the pre-launch versions of the ships, because each designer has his own, is using a different software program. So
Yes,
the program
yes.
that is being used for the Borak, the previews, I mean, the final product still looks fine compared to everyone else, but it's just the style is very different for the preview relative to, say, the Andromedan preview, or if you ever see any of Will McCammon's Feds or Klingons or Kestrels, they I guess they present the best before you print them,
Oh,
but
yeah.
of course, everyone's stuff. I mean, I guess it's better to compare them actually once they're actually in the plastic. But I think it's those kind of little things and stuff. But I think it's that the downside is that it makes things awkward because I think one of the ships that you should I don't know if it's already been uploaded or not, but Will McCammon was working on the OK-6. And someone else was doing the Orion,
Ooh,
but
okay.
it was basically impossible to translate the Orion part of the ship into the program that Will was using. So he basically had to create an Orion CR from the scratch and then use it combined with the Klingon secondary hull to create the OK-6.
Right. Which is, that's one of those kind of goofy ships. Do you know the history of that anyway? Gary? Because obviously there's a history behind why, I think part of the history of that is that there was an abandoned, not quite abandoned, but a jettison rear hull from a mutiny that occurred on a Klingon ship.
I don't have I mean, I have the Klingon Master Starship book hidden somewhere, but I don't have it to hand right now. But yeah,
Okay.
something like that. It's basically either the ship mutinied or, because sometimes in those situations, the loyalist Klingons, they jettison the boom and it is able to be recovered. But then the secondary hull is either destroyed or, I guess in this case, captured.
Right.
But of course, there was the case where the Hydrans were able to capture the anarchists complete and they were able to convert it to their own technology. So. But when you think about it, actually, I think the Klingons must have, they must be the most exported technology in the game system because there's so many, there's the Romulans, of course, with the Kestrel ships. And then there's the Vudar, because if you look on Shapeways, the Vudar engine ships use Klingon engines. And then the Wynn-Fish ships, they use Klingon engines too. And then you've got the OK-6 and the TK-5. And also you've got the Federal Republic because, they have those Klingon ships that are in Captain's Log 53, and they also use parts from the F5L to create their own destroyer ship. So I don't think there's any other empire at that
angle. You would think that the Federation, which was supposed to be the most capitalistic, well, empire in the game, which was kind of like a weird thing because Star Trek was not about capitalism, but that's another story in itself.
Yeah.
But they were supposed to have the largest economy. You would think that they would be doing the most exporting, but...
Well, the difference is that the Federation, when it comes to military technology, they would have various either member planets that would they would like acquire older generation ships for their National Guards, or there'd be independent planets that are within Federation space. Like there's a species called the Bizen who are kind of cat people. They're kind of like the ISC's Corlivalar, and they actually acquire a hodgepodge of Federation ships to use for their own pocket navy or whatever. But the feds aren't as keen to export their tech to foreign star empires. Although, of course, there is the Federal Republic because, you know, they rely on the Terran designs that they inherited when they got transplanted over. So there is that, too.
But they were Federation colony, so it wasn't like the Federation was exporting their technology to someone else. It was like, yeah, it's our own colony, and oops, it's transported somewhere.
Yeah. Well, when you think about it, I mean, the whole idea about the Kestrels was pretty much inherited from the source material. Cause, but I would imagine that, you know, had that episode shown, because I think the reason why in the original series, that episode showed Klingon ships in Romulan hands is because the Bird of Prey model or the Warbird model was lost or destroyed or something. Like there's a theory that the original creator destroyed it, but I don't know if that's true or not. There's all sorts of urban legends about that thing. But
in any case,
allegedly, the person who actually created the original design for the Romulan, like Bird of Prey or whatever, either lost or destroyed it after not being paid or something. But again, that's just an urban legend. I'm not trying to say that's true or not, whatever. But there's all sorts of, you know, thing going on. But in any case, it was not available.
They could have bought the model from Mattel. I remember buying a Warbird that was made by Mattel.
But I don't think that they actually had one available by the time the Enterprise episode was being done. Because, they did have a Klingon model because I think AMT was working with the producers to produce the Klingon D7. And so they happened to have that on hand. So they came up with a line saying, new technology or new intelligence says that Romulans are using Klingon technology, whatever. But had it not been for that episode, like had that episode showed not Klingon ships, it's quite like possible that in the Starfleet universe, the whole idea of the Treaty of Smarva wouldn't have happened. So the OADB is very keen to avoid tax slashing. And so at this stage of the game.
Right. Okay.
Just because of one person losing a model or whatever, it's had implications for generations. Well, at least in the Starfleet universe, not the Paramount universe where nothing is the same.
Well, I will say that I think this is one of those things that I think that the Mongoose deal is a real benefit because, like, the universe, the background says that ships like the Sparrowhawk were designed with Klingon influence. But when you looked at the classic Sparrowhawk models, you're like, it's not quite that obvious. I mean, but then when you look at the Starline 2500 Sparrowhawk, it really has that. It basically gives a much stronger example of a ship that has a Klingon influence, but is still recognizably Romulan.
Right.
So, I mean, of course, other people prefer the classic model, and that's perfectly fine. But I do think it's interesting that, you know, decades after the fact, these things are able to be put into play. So, because people can still, like with Shapeways, they can get the plus versions of the various cog ships if they want. So they can have that Mongoose style, or they can have the classic style. So no one's forcing them to have one or the other.
Yep. Oh, just to let you know, I found the ship description for the OK-6. So this unique ship combined the forward elements of a Orion CR with with a captured rear hull of a Klingon battlecruiser built from the rear hull of the Klingon D6 Conquest, captured by Death OK in Y-163. The Orions of the Pharaoh cartel replaced the boom with an incomplete Sierra hull and operated the ship as an enforcer and heavy raider. OK was promoted to command of the CA Hammerfield for the victory. He is quoted as observing that the auxiliary control section on the D6 was somewhat cramped. The Conquest boom successfully separated, but Captain Curlin was executed for incompetence. The OK-6 cannot double its warp or impulse. Big surprise, no stealth bonus. Duh. Can't land on planets. Yeah. And cannot separate section, of course. It does not have the traditional, Orion double hit bonus. It does not carry Orion suicide bomb. I totally forgot about that thing. And does not have a cloaking device, but one can be and could have been installed. The OEM was never installed on the original ship, and the Orions had little interest in acquiring one. So,
actually, the ship that I thought was kind of most interesting was it was one of the older captain's logs. I think I purchased that back in the 80s or 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Klingon cruiser where they had added a rear arc photon to it.
Wow.
I think that's a bit too, anti-Paramount. I mean, the kind of, like, I don't think Paramount would have been happy with that sort of thing, because that might have been a little bit too close to the post-1979 franchise. But if you do want Klingon ships with photon torpedoes, there are the ones that the FRA use, because they swapped out the disruptors for photons. So, but they're still in the same nacelle caps that the Klingons put disruptors in.
Right.
But this was one that was a one of a kind. I think it was the Masters. It was one of those scenarios.
Oh, okay.
And they took a Klingon cruiser and they added. It's a regular standard Klingon cruiser. They made a few changes to it. One of the changes was that, and by the way, we're adding a rear arc photon torpedo. And it's like, oh, that could be fun. Somebody's not expecting that.
Oh, agreed.
Because I think the ship that it was fighting was not told, basically it's like, you're going to be fighting this ship, and we're making some modifications, so you don't know exactly what you're fighting. So he didn't know exactly what he was fighting, but whoever was fighting him didn't know about his rear arc photon. He's like, oh, well, that'll be fun.
Oh, yeah, that's a shocker. Yeah.
Well, oh, I'm going to get behind him where he can't. Oh, whoops.
Yeah. Heck, even without that, getting behind, directly behind the Klingon cruiser is a bad move.
Is contraindicated, yes.
That's because
he's got really thin shields back there. Yeah, but.
Yeah, you can fire so many phasers directly aft, The four extended phasers that are on the boom right in the front, those can go directly aft. You've got the waist phasers.
Phaser on the ship can fire directly to the rear.
Yep. It's nuts. But, don't get me started on Klingons. Because they were like the favored empire, if I recall correctly, when it comes to the Steves. What the heck is this?
Well, we were going to discuss the Kazini versus the Klingon tournament cruisers. And to tell you the truth, the Klingon is one of the most powerful of the tournament cruisers. So is the Zin, by the way.
Oh, yeah. The one, when it comes to the Zin overall, I like it. And the reason why I like it is because, of in my mind, the Zinti tournament cruiser is one of those few cruisers that's in tournament play that a Federation player can hit it and possibly hit with all four photons, and it will survive and it will still have a chance of winning against the Federation.
It's a powerful ship.
Yes, it's got, I forgot how many boxes, it's like over 100. It's like 110, I think, 110, 115. Number, that's the total number of boxes in the ship.
It's also got a very large number of weapons.
Yep, lots of phaser threes. You got the four drones, you got the four disruptors, and those disruptors are not just forward arc disruptors, the forward arc right and forward arc left disruptors.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it's got the best scatter pack in the game.
Amen.
It's got more drone points than anybody else.
Right, which gives it a lot more options when it comes to for playing. You know, and that's one of those things that is quite. You know, it gives that flexibility because of you can have up to if I call it correctly, I think it's two full loads of fast drones, which is 8 fast drones, and you can have I think it's 2 type 4s.
Three heavy drones.
Yeah.
The only one that has 3.
Right. So, to say the very least, that makes it difficult. So when you, and then, I think here's one thing I've never seen yet. I've never seen anyone try this, which is some of the other modules which are available. For example, if I call correctly, in the tournament play, you can have it so it has the extended range.
Okay.
So instead of lasting only 3 turns, it will last longer.
Right. Can you? I don't think you can buy ATG though, right?
No, I don't think so. That was one thing I'd have to look up.
But I think you can buy extended range, which, to tell you the truth, it's like nobody ever does, because why waste your points on that?
Agree.
I mean, if I buy a fast drone, it's going to hit. So.
Oh, agreed. But, agreed.
Yeah.
What is it? Drones.
I mean, 3 turns of fast is I don't care who you are. A drone going three turns and it's fast. There's no getting away from that.
Yeah. You're allowed to buy.
You're tractoring it. You're shooting it. Or you're weaseling it. Or you're taking the hit.
Right.
Those are your 3 choices.
Right. And then the Zinni has, of course, double control channels. So it can have 12 drones on the board versus the Klingon, which only can have 6.
Well, that's a mixed bag, because if you put out 12 drones, that's like, weasel.
Yeah. But at the same time, okay, so you weasel. That means you stopped. I'm still coming in. And depending upon what drones are on the board, you know, you could have it so that you have 12 type 20s. What are you saving up? You're saving up the fast drones and possibly the heavies.
Right.
And which gives you 2 options. If you have that many drones on the board, you have 2 options. You can either run away from them, which means you're not doing much else, because keep up that speed for a normal ship means you're not charging weapons, or at least you're not firing them weapons very much anyway.
Right.
Or in which case, keeping up your speed, you're knocking them down with phasers, or you're wild weaseling. If you wild weasel, you're giving up all your speed, and so the Zinni can just come in and just thwap you really hard. If you know, obviously it depends upon the situation. If it's all the way across the board, obviously you can, while, and the drones are very far away from the Zenny ship, yeah. But the Zenny player would hopefully realize this and not be that far from his drones. Because you want to be following the drones in.
The only way you're getting a 12 drone wave is if you have scatter packing included in that.
Right. Oh, I agree. Building up a 12 drone wave without the scatter pack is futile because of by the time you do that. With your four drone racks.
Some of the drones have been phasered down or tractored or, yeah.
Or more to the point, well, they're about to die. They're still on the board. They're about to die because they're on their third turn. Or close. Yeah. But right. Yeah, just to read up on the possible upgrades. The possible upgrades. Zinnies can use 4 points to upgrade from speed medium to speed fast. That's a half point per. You can buy an extra type one, you know, type one medium drone for reloads at a cost of 1.5 mm-hmm. points per drone. I've yet to see anyone do that. It mentions that explicitly you cannot use it to load up a second scatter pack. Bummer.
Right.
Or extended endurance, which costs half a point for each. And the Klingon has 2 points, yeah, of course.
Right. But here's the thing. If you've got 12 drones out there, and I do a weasel, first of all, your scatter pack is gone. So you can only build that 12 drone wave once.
Yes.
And... So your wave is gone, and you've burned through a huge amount of your ammunition.
Understood.
Yeah.
But I guess the big point of the double control channels is not to have a wave of 12 drones. It's that you are not limited. If you already have 6 drones on the board, you're not limited. Oh, I have right. to drop the control for some of the drones that are already on the board. It leaves you more options. You ever played the Klingon? You've after you launch your scatter pack drones, you can't do anything.
You can't launch drones again.
Right.
Right.
You're stuck. So the double control challenge gives you more options. You can launch 2 more additional drones. You know,
yeah.
Or launch all 4 if some of the scatter pack drones get knocked down. You know, it gives you options, which is the important fact in that case. Obviously,
well, you can recycle control channels within an impulse, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if I put, let's say I put a large drone in the scatter pack. So that's really 5 drones there. So I can launch another one. And then as they get destroyed, I can launch one more. So,
Oh, understood. Obviously, you know, and the one of the big issues for the Zinni is that it's got the seeking weapons. It's got wonderful disruptor arcs. Doesn't have that many phaser mm-hmm. ones. It has like 4 phaser ones. Has lots of phaser threes.
But it's got a lot of P3s.
Oh, okay. You do not want to come in close to a Zinni ship because it's designed.
It is a hack and slash.
Yeah, amen.
Now,
downsides
of the thing is the turn mode is only C.
Agreed, though it's not.
And its phaser arcs are not the greatest.
Mm-hmm. Oh, kind of. The good thing about the phaser threes is that the phaser arcs of the phaser threes cover everything.
Yes, they do.
Well, you know, you only have like two,
they do.
360 phaser ones, and then you have the two other ones, which I think they match the arc of the disruptors, if I recall correctly.
It does not have UIM either. That's another thing.
Yeah, that's the one thing I was going to bring up about the Klingon, which is a big freaking pain in my...
Well, that UIM, that's what makes the Klingon the Klingon. If the Klingon didn't have the UIM, it would be a lackluster ship.
Agreed.
But, well, there's a few other things the Klingon has. The Klingon has some interesting stuff to it.
Oh.
It's got more heavy phasers, and I can include a P2 as a heavy phaser. It's got more heavy phasers than any other ship in the game.
Agreed. And if for nothing else, those phaser twos give you additional phaser capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't ever fire them at all, they give you four additional phaser capacitors. So you can right. fire your phaser ones more often without having to recharge. Of course, then we've got the turn mode, as we already expressed earlier, which is of course the crazy firing arcs when it comes to the phasers, where they, you know, they can actually fire out the rear, and then of course you have the Klingon, the special arcs that they have for the phasers.
But are those special? Yeah, are the special arcs allowed in tournament? I forget.
Yes, they are.
And that's something else that no other ship in the game has, right?
That's correct. Though the Fed has special arcs too for its phasers. The on the not the turret, the on the cell. Not the cell. Damn.
The side phasers can fire directly to the rear.
Right.
Yeah.
I was just bringing up the rules just to see if I can. Yes. It uses the D2.32 and D2.33 phaser firing arcs, i.e., the special arcs. So it's explicitly stated. Now, it doesn't
funny
say
how the first two ships ever put in the game have those special arcs. And after that, they're like, we don't need to do that. We'll just give them standard arcs. Oh. Nobody else ever did that.
Barry, the special arcs are the bane of my, not quite the bane of my existence, but they're a pain in the butt. You know, at the moment, the client itself does not support it, even though I do have some functionality to allow you to do what's called an alpha strike. So you just say, okay, I want to fire this ship. What weapons actually will fire on that ship? And it'll calculate it out. The only thing it can't calculate is those special arcs.
Oh, I did not know you had added that functionality to the client.
That's been in that in the client for years, my friend.
It's been years since I've used the client.
Yeah, because there's a button that says alpha strike. You know.
Okay.
And then when you click that button, it then says, "Okay, what's your target?" And then it allows you to.
I must have.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you didn't. You can't put that in. Oh my God, the special arcs would.
Yeah, in theory, it's possible. It's just not easy, and in my mind, it's not worth the effort. You know.
Right.
Because here's the real question. Outside of tournament play, even in tournament play, how often are those special arcs actually used? You know, do people even remember to use
them? Only if you're playing. Well, the Klingon's the only. The Klingon sees a lot more play than the Fed.
Right. Oh, I agree, because Lord knows.
Surpri- interestingly enough, you know, the Fed's the most, the game was based on, the whole game was based around the Feds. And that's probably the, one of the least used ships.
Well, when it comes to tournament play, yeah, because what's the big issue with the Fed? And don't say it needs a Type G drone rack. The biggest issue with the Fed is the photons.
Yes. They are roll the dice, you won or you lost. Well, what was the fun of that? There's no tactics involved.
Yeah, though if you've ever read the captain's, the Go Ahead article from Bill Scheller, he basically pointed out that, yeah, he played the Fed, but his goal for every single game, except for there's a few that he knows it's hard to do, which is like against the Gorn. His goal was to make it to range two, to fire his photons at range two, where he had a good percentage chance of actually hitting with all
of them.
Yes. Versus firing, yeah. You know, firing
yeah.
longer range and just praying. You know?
Right. Well, at range two, you've got a very good chance of roll four. Oh, they all hit. I won.
Yeah.
And everybody's counter tactic is to try to avoid giving the Fed range two.
Of course it is.
Or make it so that he's lost a photon by the time he gets to range two.
Oh, agreed. But at the same time, that's, you know, that means that the Fed is basically, at least it's possible that the Fed's being reckless to get into that close, because Lord knows more than one time I have a tendency, and this is a bad tendency, which is plasmas. What stinking plasmas? Run right through the stinking plasma and get to the ship, at least try to. And invariably, you know, and especially with the envelopers, I'll run through it. Yeah, no problem. I'll take 10 points off each shield, not realizing that I just put myself in a big deficit.
Yeah.
Because at that point, the timer is active at that point. I've got limited amount of time.
You now have thinner shields.
Yep. I just limited the amount of turns I've got available to me by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
60 points is 60 points.
Mm-hmm. That's the funny part is that whenever I've played plasma, I've never actually ever used an enveloper.
Really?
Really? Never have.
Hmm.
I like playing the standard, you know, pseudo game, you know, guess what I'm launching kind of thing. Is it real? Is it pseudo? You know,
mm-hmm.
I like playing that game.
Well, there is that is one way of playing it. Yeah.
Now,
is Gary still here with us, or is he, did he drop off?
No, he's still with us. He's just been very, very quiet.
I was actually going to say that, I guess an example of one of those things that, like, when the game was first, well, the universe was first created, the middle years was like the original era. And back then, Dickazinti's, the balance between drone and disruptor was opposite to that of the Klingon, and they were slower drones on both sides. So
right, they were like speed
eight. It was
less
issue. Yeah.
And speed eights worked when you had pre-plotted movement.
But also there was the issue of the ship being slower as well, because it only had 27 warp compared to 30. But
yes,
as time went on and so forth, I mean, the drones became faster and more powerful, and then the Xintis were given the same disruptors as the Lyrans and Klingons and stuff, and suddenly they became, you know, much more of a threat. But then if you look at the Federation and Empire scale, you can kind of see that that's almost necessary, because they're so outmatched in terms of the coalition, like the amount of ships and resources that the Lyrans and Klingons can throw at them in the early phases of a general war campaign, that they almost need this every last tactical edge in order to avoid being conquered. So it's, I'm not saying like that. I mean, that's one of the things I like about Omega and the LMC and Triangulum, is that there isn't that same problem with, drone type seeking weapons, taking over the universe, basically. And so, it's just one of those kind of things where, like, the game systems, depending on what scale you're looking at, some things that seem a little bit overly generous at one level turn out to be not necessarily so at the strategic level, or vice versa.
Yeah. Well, I do need to get to sleep at this point.
Okie dokie.
So I'm going to call it a night.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well,
okay.
Barry,
see you all.
It's been nice. You have a good night.
Yeah.
Okay.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Whoops, he's gone. Dang, I wasn't able to click it in time. Gary, it's always nice to have you around.
Thank you. And hopefully we'll get a chance to grill the Carnivons in more detail at some point.
Yep, next week. That's the plan. Good, because...
I do wonder what they're going to do for Shapeways, because, it'd be nice if they base it on the Carnivon ship that's on the front cover of Module C6, because, especially with the way the engines are done. But I don't know if that's actually, they've been doing that a lot lately, with the Andromedan X ship and with a few of the other more modern interpretations of various ships. So it wouldn't surprise me, but I guess we'll have to wait and see, because I don't even know if anyone's actually put their hand up and said, I want to do the Carnivons for Shapeways or not, but time will tell.
Mm-hmm. Understood. That agreed. That's cool. I just brought up the cover for the Carnivons. Those look really nice. To be honest, they look a heck of a lot better than they do when it comes to the counters. Because it's that overlook, and they look really boxy and blocky, and you expect them to be more of a compact ship, while the ones shown on the cover, the engines are below the ship, and it's less blocky, more starshipy, I guess. Because the counters look like a flying box is what they look like. What was that? I'm sorry.
I was just saying that the Paravian ships on the front cover look a lot better than the previous art for the Paravian ships too.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. They're really nice. Well, with that, I'm going to let you go, and hopefully I'll see you next week.
Have a good night, Paul.
Okay, you too. Okay, bye-bye. So, things didn't go quite according to what we planned, but as I've always mentioned, every single time I post a topic, the topic is subject to change without notice. This is one of those nights. We actually did get a little bit of discussion between the Zinni and the Klingon, not as much as I was planning on, because I was planning, how would each defend and each attack each other, and how would the game generally go. That was more what I was looking for, but obviously we kind of mentioned the strengths of each ship, and in general, and then we got to other tournament cruisers, and which is fine. It's a fine discussion, about that. Obviously it was very short, but the important thing that we got to talk about all kinds of topics, including the Borak, which I need to add support. I got to check to see if I've added support into the online client for FedCom. If not, I need to add it. And I think I actually need to grab my caps lock number 51 and look to see the rules. I think that's where they might be for FedCom. Cause I know they're not with the Omegas. unless they're in different playtest rules, which I need to download from Warehouse 23, which I'm sure I'll find out. But anyhow, and with that, I am Paul Friend, and I bid you a good night.